Podcasting 2.0 for February 10th, 2023, episode 121, Lawful But Awful. Oh, hello, everybody. Once again, it's a Friday, time for the board meeting, the official one, the only board meeting for Podcasting 2.0, everything happening in podcasting. We are the first line of defense against big tech capture. That's right. We are slaying it. You can find everything at podcastindex.org. Of course, we've got the podcast namespace where all the innovation is documented and everything happening at podcastindex.social. I'm Adam Curry here in the chilly heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. He's the big A in API. Say hello to my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mr. Dave Jones.
Did you call me the big A?
In API.
Okay.
Yeah, not as in, you know, it's meant to be... Come on, man. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. You know, I just throw it out there. You know, whatever comes to mind. I got to do something every single week. So
I'm drinking the beef milk. I'm halfway through the beef milkshake. So, I mean, Big A's on it's on his way.
It's on the way. Big A is coming. Brother, how are you feeling, by the way? Because I know you were still a little bit under the weather.
Oh, yeah. This has been a roller coaster. I went down, got the antibiotics and the steroid shot. Mm-hmm. Came back up, was like 99%, then went right back down again. with round two, my thought was, okay, I didn't clear the first thing, whatever this was, and it's come back. But now I'm thinking, because I'm thinking that the sequence of events was that I got sick, cleared that out, and then just, the universe hates me. I'm unlucky. And so I just got a different, I think I got two different things back to back.
Oh, goodness. I mean, this is, Tina had this thing that you have. It was, and she was, I'd say it took a good 2 weeks and she basically either cracked or bruised a rib severely. So she still has a little, from the coughing. And like, I'm Mr., and she's so healthy compared to me and works out, you know, twice a day and does all this stuff. And I just kind of like, whoa, do a podcast, have some beef and vape.
That's
and vape,
your health regimen.
And a Dr. Pepper. And I didn't get anything. And I know lots of people, like, it's been bad.
Melissa has a force field. I mean, she never gets sick. Mm. And I mean, like somebody... You know, floats by me and I get and looks at me wrong and I get sick. It's so annoying.
That sucks, brother. So, have you been working from home?
No.
You've been going into the office?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Dude, during the pandemic, I didn't miss a day except for those 11 days I was locked in my room with COVID.
Which was bad. I remember that. You were on the ropes.
Yeah, we did.
We still did the show. I remember that. That's right, brother. That's your vow of poverty for the furtherment of podcasting.
Yeah, I was crawling across the floor and tried to reach the mic.
Yeah, I remember this. Oh, goodness. So those of you that have it and know about it, we're lit. That means that we are live on the air. It's a fantastic new format for podcasting that I'm very familiar with because I've been doing it for maybe 13, 14 years, the 15 years of No Agenda, but it never came together the way it is in these apps now with chat room, with live stream, and of course the extra bonus of the live boostergrams. This thing is catching fire. And I saw the new media show, Todd and Rob, they went live with video, which was made possible in the new version of Podverse with, I think, a lot of background assist from Alex Gates, since it was this new chip-top, choppy LS thingamabob video format.
HLS.
Yes, what I mean, HLS, which sounds...
Chip-chop,
chip-a-lope. Yep. HLS sounds like something bad that you can get, you know, can catch.
What, like RSV?
Yeah, I got a case of HLS, man. Oh, stay away from me, bro.
I didn't realize that Alex was in on that. I was kind of like tangential to what was going on. Did he jump in and whip him into shape?
I think because his PeerTube work has been with HLS and No Agenda Tube, which is, you know, the PeerTube instance that he runs. has this HLS capability. So, I mean, what can you tell us besides the fact that Podverse has now come into its own, into a mature state of application, I would say. Right. What is this HLS stuff, and why is it important, and do I need a special server for it? How does this work?
I think if I'm not mistaken, Apple had a strong hand in HLS. I think if I'm not mistaken, so I think I'm totally not the expert with video streaming formats, but I think if I understand it correctly, sort of, HLS is like,
it's an acronym like for something, chunked, I guess, right?
HLS. Yes. HTTP live streaming is that.
Oh, acronym. Okay. That helps. HTTP live streaming. Yeah.
Yeah. You segment the stream into
chunks,
into, I guess, chunks or something. And then you, rather than like, trying to stream an unbroken,
right. So this, like,
as opposed to MP3 streaming, right, you know, that kind of thing.
So this is why it works on Curiocaster as well, because that's basically a web browser, and the web browsers already understand this HLS format.
Well, I think they're using a library. I don't know if the browsers understand it natively, but I think they're using a sort of a common library to do this that understands it well. It may Safari, I think, may do it HLS natively. I don't know about Chrome-based browsers.
Okay.
There's a lot I don't know about it, but I do know it's way more efficient. Like it tolerates poor connections well, and it's the right way to go. So it's the modern approach.
It's not just video. It does MP3 and AC3 and all other AAC. Mm-hmm. So is this something we should be using in general also for audio lit streaming?
I think the difference here is, again, with the caveats of my knowledge of video, I think the difference here is that something like MP3 streaming is so small already. Mm-hmm. Like audio only streaming is already just efficient by nature, whereas something like video streaming is so heavy,
right,
that you can survive with some audio streams that are a little bit fatter than you can with a video stream that's fat. You really have to pare that down and make it nice for, latency and things like that. Mm. But Nathan G says HLS lets you skip back to catch the start of the live episode and even increase the playback speed to catch up.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Is it packet based? I'm not real sure. I don't know how deep in the OSI stack it goes. I don't know if it goes all the way down to the, you know, like,
so now
the lower levels.
Now what I need to do is also bake in WebTorrent, and then we don't even need streaming servers. We don't even need infrastructure. It just works.
Yeah, it'll only take, it'll be here in 2 years.
Yeah.
perpetually.
No, that's like 10 years for anything climate change related. Yeah, we'll have green hydrogen in 10 years. Okay, great.
10 years, always 10 years.
Always
self-driving cars, 5 years.
Yeah. Well, I remember, we might have talked about this in a recent episode. Was it BitTorrent Live or something? Remember BitTorrent before they became a company and took money, and then it all sucked. Mm-hmm. But they were going to do something. Maybe that's what WebTorrent is. I don't know. But I've always been very enamored of the idea that you didn't need a central server for streaming stuff for a number of reasons. But I always thought that would be cool if that actually worked. And I think WebTorrent does it to some degree.
It does, except, you know, the problem is you always just, it's hard to get everybody to seed and to participate.
Right.
It's like you have this, I don't know if I call it a chicken and egg problem, but you have to have enough. It's the same as the DHT bootstrap problem that you have with DHT based networks. Once you get to a critical mass, something like IPFS, you can ride, you're good to go. But then there's that initial thing of trying to get enough peers online and bootstrapped.
Yeah.
So that you have other people participating, like, and it seems like every time you would boot up a live stream, you would have to go through that entire process again. You know, it's the way it is with BitTorrent too. Every time you you find something and you start to download it, it's like, okay.
Well, went offline.
It went, yeah.
One
yeah.
guy
you
left.
Had one guy.
Stay yeah, online, guy. Man. Don't, oh, he went offline. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I remember yeah. that. I'm, it's in a way, it's like Noster, which I'm still experimenting with. And, you know, it's, you're so right. Alex is right too, about, the relays. It's all about the relays. 100% of any issue is relay related. And I can just, I think probably 90% of people who try out Noster say, oh, it's a Twitter that's decentralized, which of course isn't, I mean, the protocol is built for anything. Was it notes over things and relays or whatever it stands for?
Something like, yes. Yeah,
yeah. But the minute you boot up and a relay is not, isn't there or is overloaded, then you know stuff doesn't load. And I mean the user experience is very hit or miss, and please don't email me and tell me that I'm doing it wrong.
You're holding it wrong.
Yeah, holding it wrong. And then so I was really jacked when Umbral, I think it was a Dorsey, said, oh, you know, he just posted a screen picture, because you know why post any, he doesn't post words. Be like,
nobody does anymore. They, like, everybody like posts pictures.
Hang 10 emoji, PV, which I guess is Noster for beautiful life, or you know, have a great day or whatever. It's like, oh, you can now load a relay on your Umbral. I'm like, oh, okay, now you're talking. So I install it. Yeah, all right. So it's like several other apps that are all exciting on Umbral. But unless mm-hmm. you have a public IP with a cert, so you can do HTTPS or in this case WSS, it's not going to work.
What is WSS?
WS. I don't know. It's some. This. It's like HTTPS.
I rarely hear an acronym that I've never heard before. I have no idea what this is.
Well, I learned about it because WSS is the here WS on HTML. Let's see. Here it is. Stack Overflow, WebSocket. It's WebSocket protocol.
Oh, okay.
Please, I'm disappointed. Yes, you didn't know this.
Okay. No, I got you.
Okay, so all the apps expect a WSS connection, but of course your Umbral is not going to be WSS out of the box. It's WS. So even though I use Tailscale, which mm-hmm. is pretty secure, I think. I would now have to go through the effort of setting up a cert for the encrypted session, and otherwise the apps won't talk to my relay, and the relay only will archive what I'm doing anyway. It's not a relay that you can use publicly, as far as I understand.
So there's no like Tor's a no-go, is what you're saying.
I don't run over Tor.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if somebody wanted to do their Noster relay over Tor, that's not going
to
happen.
Well, you still have to have it secure.
Yeah.
It's looking for a secure sockets layer.
Because, I mean, 90% of the people that have Umbrals, like, at home, they don't have public IPs mapped to that.
No.
It's all Tor.
That I mean, I haven't used... Well, Tor, for me, blows. I mean, it's just too
it's
slow.
Terrible.
It sucks. You know, half the stuff you want to do, you have to switch to a Tor browser. So Tailscale is you know, godsend. Tailscale.
But your public connections, like to your channels and stuff, that's
Tor.
Is that
that's
Tor.
Tor. Yeah, yeah, that's Tor. Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Which is because if you're coming back through your home network, yeah. you know, then you're gonna have to, if it doesn't do Tor, then
yeah.
you're kind of out of the water
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and even so, there's so I have to reopen a channel to my Umbral node with Podcast Index at least once every 2-3 weeks. Because whatever
I've noticed this, by the way,
with your own node as well.
No, I noticed it with your node because I had to dump all the transactions out for taxes.
Curry's opening and closing 2 million sats every day.
Every time it was 2 million. I was like, what in the world is going on? And it was like force close. Like, oh
yeah,
God.
Force close from Podcast Index, and that's a pretty good node. You know, I don't know how to configure it differently, so I'm so sick.
Tor blows.
Yeah, and I think it's the laptop that I'm running that Umbral on. That's why I ordered a Bitcoin machine, another one of those, because I have no problem with that machine, even though it's also running over Tor, same network. So it's got to be something with the machine. It's all, it's amazing any of it works at all, Dave. It's amazing any of this works.
It really is.
Yeah. But congratulations to Mitch on a great new version of Podverse. Love it. I love the thanks to Todd for running with a huge pair of shears.
Loppers.
He is not afraid of anything. Oh, yeah, we'll just do the switching protocols on the fly or whatever. I don't know. It didn't work. And then he switched to, I guess he was streaming an audio / whatever, MPEG versus video. And he just switched it on the fly and it all worked. It was amazing. It was really amazing.
And he's whatever they've got going there with his setup, he's able to get it. You know, the pod pings go out for the video and the audio stream both.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can see the sort of like the narrowing down of these troubles each week as they go in this, like they're settling on an actual, you know, stable platform that works.
Yeah. It's very cool.
And Mitch is high on Podverse. I mean, and I am too. I mean, like he's pretty excited about this version. And I mean, and he should be.
It feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like it's taken a step into like the upper level of podcast apps now. The stability's there. The polish is there.
It's getting there for sure.
Podverse is a great app.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And did you tell me that Podcast Guru was going to implement value for value payments?
Maybe. I hope so. Yeah, in the future.
Oh, I thought I heard that somewhere. I don't know. I'm trying to keep up. No one tells me anything anymore. I don't know why.
Yeah, I hope so.
We did get a great gift from Marcus Couch. I don't think you know Marcus Couch, but I know him. Oh goodness, back to the pod show days. So Marcus, him and his lovely wife, always stayed in touch, and he's a big fan of podcasting 2.0, and he, you know, is always promoting and boosting, and he said that he won in an auction podcastapps.com.
Whoa.
And he, really? And he said, hey, you want me to transfer that to you? I said, no, man, you hold on to that. But yeah, he's just going to point it to our apps page. So instead of new podcast apps, we'll also have podcastapps.com.
Well, that's a strong win.
Yeah, he says, I think he gets it in 11 days or something. I don't know what he paid for it. I hope he didn't go crazy on that.
Oh, yeah. I hope he's not
strong win. Strong win is the right word.
Podcastapps.com.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Domain. It's a great domain. Great domain. I tried to register lawful but awful today.
It was already is taken. That like a phrase or something?
Did you not read the latest how top political podcasters spread unsubstantiated and false claims?
Oh, I remember lawful but awful. That's Vicky. That's buddy Vicky.
Yeah, Vicky. So she came out with another article. Our pal Vicky over there at Brookings.
Well, I printed it last night, and I'm going to send Brookings a bill for the amount of toner that I had to use to print this 25,000 word monstrosity of an article.
With a lot of graphs.
It's less of an article and more like a pamphlet or an imprint. It's very, very long. And I have not read it yet.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, the article is Audible Reckoning, which I'm not quite sure why she chose that as a title. Valerie Wirtschafter. How top political podcasters, which I am not in that list, by the way, spread unsubstantiated and false claims. And her whole article, as it comes to the evolution of the podcasting medium, is filled with unsubstantial and false claims. Such as, you know, Ben Hammersley, of course, invented podcasting, and he is a podcast pioneer.
So I don't have on hand the article that the last time this came up, you know?
No, we discussed it on the show for sure.
Yeah. It's been a couple of months ago, but this was the one where, like on the first page, she referenced a New York Times article and she said, and she summarized and she gave a link to the article and summarized what the article's conclusions were. So, of course, I clicked the link and went and read the article. Uh-huh. The article's conclusions were the 180% opposite of the thing that she said they were. It was like, she said, the New York Times discovered that so-and-so. Then when actually they said literally in the article, it was the exact opposite of the thing. And I was like, okay, lady.
She said some things that were very interesting, although not the way I remember it, but it doesn't matter. Because what happened, according to Ben Hammersley, who basically invented the whole category. Because he said, audio blogging, podcasting, guerrilla media, this is before anything was really, before Dave and I had put it all together with the iPod. But at the time, this term was describing serial audio content that could be played on demand through any MP3 device, such as the then increasingly popular iPod. Listeners could take their audio with them, pause it as needed, the pause start button, and start again at their convenience. Early adopters of the medium shared episodes through really simple syndication feeds, which users could consume by subscribing directly or indirectly. The RSS architecture, here it comes, facilitated the growth of a decentralized medium detached from regulatory oversight, which I like. That's the part. That's the only part of the article I think is really good, because then she goes on with, it was a medium where, quote, anyone can be a publisher, anyone can be a broadcaster, according to one of podcasting's pioneers, footnote 14. And that's literally Ben Hammersley. So he, I guess, did it all. And then... where was it? There was something funny in here. Like, once written off as a dead medium. Let's see, where was that? It was, it doesn't really matter. But what I think is unfortunate, because again, the whole point of this article is, podcasting has no moderation. There's, unlike social media, there's no way for the crowd to push back. Where I would say immediately, well, if you actually did some research, you see that currently boostergrams are a way to push forward or push back. And there is sufficient work on cross-app comments. So since it's all just people talking to themselves with no feedback loop, complete bull crap, because, you know, we do have things such as email and people do have places to comment. There are even services to comment. We don't have any, any moderation. It's always about moderation with her. And how do we get the overlords to moderate, and make sure that people don't get mis or disinformation out there? And again, if she did any work and maybe did even a Google search, you might find that, when she says, well, there's no incentive for the companies that make podcast apps to do any of this.
The companies.
Yeah. I mean, the beauty is, if she seems to, Brookings seems to have a lot of money. So I would say, Brookings, mm-hmm. why don't you come in, read the API docs, and create your own app? You can use our index, and you can put all kinds of reporting bits and alarm bells that you can push that go somewhere and tell somebody. You can do all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff like this.
Dashboard.
You can have a dashboard. Yes, you can have a complete dashboard. Yeah. You could have an app that censors all the stuff that is bad. You could actually, you as Brookings Institute could do this. You could filter out all the stuff that is awful, lawful, but awful.
Well, that should be the name of the app, the LBAS.
Yes, I tried, I'm sure somebody already registered it. But that's literally what the content is called, lawful, but awful.
This always strikes me similarly to the way that the Bitcoin narrative of it's just used by bad guys. the bad guys use it for all kinds of terrible things. So clearly it's bad. Well, have you checked out the U.S. dollar lately? It gets used for a lot of bad things. For the history of all of for all of the entire history of its. Of its use. And so there it's like, well, yeah, podcasts, sure, there's misinformation and disinformation and all kinds of information on podcasts. Step outside every now and then, you're going to see that there's MDM on every corner of the street, in every newspaper. It's all over the place.
MDM?
Mal, dis, and misinformation.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So here.
Well, I found the article, though. U.S. podcast. This is from October 3rd.
Last year?
Yeah, right. 22, yeah. U.S. In the title of the article is U.S. podcasters spread Kremlin narratives on Nord Stream sabotage.
And it turns out to all be true.
Yes. Yes. And so here it says the U.S. did it. The quote U.S. did it conspiracy on popular American podcasts. And there's a chart.
And it now confirmed. I don't know if you saw it. Now confirmed by Pulitzer Prize winning
Seymour Hersh,
who has stopped like the Vietnam War. He is credited with being the impetus for stopping the Vietnam War because of his reporting on the atrocities committed there. But okay. Yes.
So it turns
out to be true. So does I can't see anything here where she retracts that. Of course not. But listen to this.
There's no retraction.
In this new article, the role of podcasting apps and tech companies. Okay. We talked to some of those people. Since the early years of podcasting, apps have taken a hands-off approach to moderating content and provide No, Apple deplatformed, Spotify deplatformed, so no. Since the early years of Since the early years of podcasting, apps have taken a hands-off approach to moderating content, have provided a sparse architecture to facilitate distribution. As the medium continues to evolve and expand for 18 years, the tech companies that develop podcasting apps, you can help shape the information ecosystem in important ways by crafting more robust content moderation guidelines and practices, promoting greater transparency, and improving the in-app experience for users, which starts with content moderation.
I thought it started with sleep timers.
Number one requested feature is not content moderation.
No,
Vicky.
No,
it's sleep timer. It's dark mode. Okay. Dark mode. As the medium grows in popularity, this is interesting, and based on the European Union's recently enacted Digital Services Act, which the DSA, which sets forth the contours of digital content moderation across the EU, podcasting apps may soon be forced to reckon with how they handle content that falls into the so-called, here it is, lawful but awful domain, such as hate speech, misinformation, and targeted harassment. Well, I harass people on the podcast all the time.
You do. I'm
very proud of that. These policies will have to balance a desire to limit the real world harm that can stem from the mass dissemination of objectionable content with a vital necessity not to curtail speech too aggressively or inconsistency. Oh, it's a balance. Okay. To address these challenges, tech companies should provide more detailed, transparent guidelines for the content that podcasters can share on their apps. Well, I think...
Are these options? Do I get to pick between these options?
No. No, you should. It's a should. Okay, it's okay, a should. Right. You should.
Because I would like to choose between these two.
Yeah, no, it's a should. And this is we want to share this with the app developers so they know what they should be doing. Develop detailed, transparent guidelines for the content that apps will promote or recommend.
Hmm.
She also has some, she's misinformed. She believes that these apps have algorithms that recommend stuff. Here, in addition to the guidelines detailing what content tech companies will host, some platforms have developed separate guidelines for detailing the types of content their recommendation algorithms will promote.
The algorithm in most podcast apps goes like this. Grep the request logs and find out which podcast is being requested the most, mm-hmm. or how many subscribers are in that are the most for each podcast, and then recommend the ones that are at the top. That's the extent of the algorithm. There's no complicated
incorrect. Vicky Brookings Institution says apart from word of mouth recommendations, which will also soon stop. I'm adding that, but you know that will.
This is editorializing.
Okay, okay. Users often discover new podcasts through in-app recommendation systems like featured most popular lists or personalized recommendations. podcast app like Spotify and Apple Podcasts should develop similarly detailed policies on the types of content they may choose not to amplify to their users via recommendation systems, even if the apps still decide to host it.
Well, yeah, Mitch, you just need to stop bothering about HLS and stuff that makes your app work and just really focus on this. Just double down on the paperwork of regulations and policies for at least 6 months.
But wait, Mitch, there's more. Improve reporting processes for individual podcast episodes. Oh, bad episode. Podcast apps have not yet developed sophisticated real-time systems to identify harmful content at scale. And can you only guess what her solution is for this broken shit, broken feature?
Regulations.
Well, no, but we are literally doing what she is asking for. Mm-hmm. Transcripts. And machine learning to so your app needs to scan through all the transcripts to find stuff that's wrong.
Yeah, so the way this works is you transcribe everything, and then somebody when a particular strain of MDM is identified.
A strain, I like that.
Yes, when a new variant of MDM is identified. Such as the U.S. blew up the pipeline variant.
Yes, variant of MDM.
MDM. Once that is identified, somebody plugs it into the system. Mm-hmm. They stick it in there. It goes out to all the apps and cleanses them of the episodes. It's a vaccine. This is an MDM vaccine. It cleanses them of all the episodes that have this phrase or this terminology that's been identified by GPT or something
I want to turn this around.
Then 6 months later, when Seymour Hersh writes an article that says that it was actually true.
Oh, then they hit undo.
Yeah, they undo. Yeah,
Control Z. All right. So, but I want to turn this around and I want to offer to the Brookings, is it Institute or Institution?
Yes.
Thanks. I want to offer our services, anything we can do to help, because everything you'd say, and this is the last I'll read of this, because then it goes into role of government. Design an app architecture that allows for richer community engagement and more dynamic information environment. Vicky, Google, okay? Podcasting 2.0, the namespace. You have not done the work. People who support Brookings with your donations, stop them and take them back until she does the work, because she literally is discussing what we're doing. Podcast apps could experiment, which we call running with scissors, with a variety of in-app features for these purposes, including voting and commenting systems with additional features at the episode level. Hello, Vicky! With the development of open source transcription models like OpenAI's Whisper, adding transcripts to episodes has never been easier. Oh, everyone's so creative. Building on ad hoc decentralized contribution from fans, users, and hosts could be a way to add show notes and references to podcast episodes, like, I don't know, chapters, anybody? Moreover, podcasting apps could experiment with upvoting and downvoting features for these contributions, drawing inspiration from community-driven websites such as Reddit and Stack Overflow, or features like Twitter's community. All of this has been invented, much of it has been implemented, and you're still in the Stone Age, Vicky. And we would be happy, we'd welcome you. I think it's a great idea. As long as you promote the namespace and apps that do 2.0, I want people to build safe apps. I would love that. That'd be great. You can use an app that for adults, like Podverse, Castomatic, CurioCaster, Podcast Guru, Fountain, or you could have your childish pussy app. We want you to build that. I'm serious. We will help. I will consult for free. I will tell you how to do it. We have all this. So stop wasting your donors' money, Vicky.
You can have real scissors or you can have safety scissors.
Of course. With the rounded tip.
Yeah. Like you fall on them. You fall on them and we'll stick in your jugular. Yeah.
Now here's one more thing. I do think that she thinks this is very important. Podcaster funding. Despite the importance of advertisement and sponsorship revenue to the podcasting ecosystem, there are no obvious requirements for financial disclosures beyond those agreed upon between a given series and its sponsors.
What disclosures could you possibly understand, but it's
already being done in our world. We literally read out the money that people send us. We could not be more transparent.
No business has to tell anybody who gives them money unless it's like a terrorist. you're not required to report when somebody gives you, hey, somebody just paid me. Okay. Like, what is,
well, I think the point she's making is that this radio industry and social media influencers have to disclose if they're being paid or if they're, I don't know, an advisor to something. I think that's what she's saying, and that these financial relationships are not clear. It would just be another lever, another wedge, which is why I think we like the Lightning Bitcoin network, to fight exactly what she wants to use this for. But again, all of it is completely available. I think it would be podcasting 2.0. There's plenty of room for these kinds of crippled apps, also known as crap.
Did you
on the fly, on the fly, on the fly, on the fly, on the fly. I should have made it plural, craps. That should have made craps. Double.
Well, I've got a cheat sheet, by the way. It is my 100% cheat sheet. It is basically a printout of the thesaurus for everything I can use to every term I can use to replace 100%.
Yes, please.
So I agree with you, Adam, entirely.
Entirely.
Yes. I would have more respect for, for the arguments being made here if she would stop spreading misinformation while she's doing it. I mean, this is the same problem that I had with Leo's comments on Pod News Weekly Review you just said that Alex Jones was the whole point of the podcast index, which is completely not true, and go on to say like three or four things that are complete lies that are absolutely demonstrably everybody knows they're not true. So it's like, if you want to have any credibility when you criticize other people for misinformation, stop spreading it during your criticism. Like that just has to be sort of like the,
well, that's kind of the
table stakes.
but that's kind of the point, is that, you know, misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, it's all subjective. And everyone gets stuff right. And she's literally making the case that regulated businesses that have lots of these aspects, like television, it's just as bad. Except I guess you can get fired easier or something like that. The point is, it's such a waste of their money. Whereas if they believe that is the world they want to live in, my point is we have the toolkit. We even have... What's the framework that Breeze started off with? The podcast, the
framework?
Yeah, the open source framework. Airsoft.
No, you're talking about Ben Hill's.
Yeah. I mean, even you could take PodFriend, the open source version. You can spin up an app quite quickly and implement all these features instead of wasting Dave's paper and toner with your 25,000 words of marginally entertaining content, which is just regurgitated from the last time.
Anytime podcast player.
Anytime.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, written in Flutter. Yeah.
And I would love it because it would promote the namespace. It would promote so much. It would be a very, very good idea.
So, to pull this thread a bit. So I think we have to understand, I believe that there's trade-offs with a lot of this technology. And maybe I'm still deep in the weeds on Technological Society, the Jacques Ellul book.
Oh, you mean
my mind is just aiming in this direction sort of all the time. Uh-huh. But for example, Mastodon. I mean, we know, is there any doubt? I was talking to Alex this week about this. Is there any doubt in anybody's mind that what is going to happen with Mastodon? We can all agree it's better than Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yes,
it
oh,
is.
Yeah.
Sure. But just because it's better does not mean that it is not, that it A, doesn't have its own problems, and B, could potentially be even worse in the right under the right circumstances. And what I mean by that is, so it's actually much easier to do something nefarious with Mastodon.
Sure.
Create a reputation system.
Yeah.
That is some sort of open reputation system that tags each individual Mastodon user account with a social score.
Yeah, sure.
And then all these new instances begin to sign on to this reputation system. And so they instantly block replies from people who don't satisfy the reputation score. I mean, like, that's even easier to do. That's way easier to do on Mastodon than it is on Twitter. I mean, you really couldn't do that as an outside user on Twitter. Just because we go decentralized and we
doesn't mean all that horrible stuff can't happen.
Right. And it can happen in podcasting too. Like if the right people get involved and start doing what, you know, the things that she's describing and start transcribing everything and then using AI to tag certain things that interested parties think are misinformation with no regard for down the line, whether they turn out to be true. Decentralization doesn't always protect you from the bad stuff.
But open source is, of course, always the answer, which is simultaneously the problem because there's no easy money in open source. Enter value for value, but that's, I don't want to get off on that course of the conversation. But there is not going to be one network where everybody communicates. There will not be one. Even the idea of a global town square. Do you hear what you're saying? No. You have town squares. We have communities. No Agenda is a perfect example. 10,000 people on the Mastodon instance, 2,000 blocks from other instances. Fine. But that's fine. That's okay. That's how it should be, which is, again, why I would love for Twit, who understand this very well, they've blocked No Agenda, twit.social, they've blocked No Agenda. That's fine. You know, grab these 2.0 features and build an app that is for your own little protected environment that you feel comfortable with. That's the whole point. You can let in your local community wants to let. It's a federation. It's like the federated, you know, the United States is a republic, a federation. Texas will say no to some things. And, you know, it can be convinced otherwise. And we often have to convince things from the inside out, like there's things that Texans don't agree with. And we have our own our issues and battles, which can even be on the city level. That's a beautiful way. They're trying to shoehorn technology into the new world order, global everything. That's the problem. That thinking is just incorrect. It is unnatural. It is not how humans work. It is not how the world has ever worked. And thanks to the internet, they have a lot of ways have a lot of ways to do what they want, but you also just don't. You just don't. And I think that's fine. I don't, you know, is that making any sense?
Yeah, I think so.
But stop the bitching and moaning and build something.
That's a good point. That really speaks to what the goal is. The goal may not be the building. The goal may be the bitching and moaning.
Thank you.
Because
good point.
Because the bitching and moaning, a lot of times
those who can't build bitch. That's what it is.
the what what's the reason d'être or whatever, that the reason for existence.
Raison d'être.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of times the griping or the pointing out of problems is the whole point, and there is nothing that new that gets built or created. But you know, I think all the pieces are in place to do everything. To do everything. Nefarious that she's proposed.
Right, but
all these terrible things.
But I don't even think it's nefarious. I think it would be fantastic if people would make all, you know, make your payment stuff value for value is literally that if done in the full scope of valueforvalue.info, where part of the feedback loop is recognizing and is showing what the value was that you sent back. That there's your transparency. Transcripts, 100.
Can I offer you a fully? How about fully?
Fully. Nah, just fully correct.
Utterly.
Utterly correct. On the mark.
Good.
Yeah, that's a good one, right? Yes. But yes, please, more transcripts. Many, many more transcripts. And it even fits with ChatGPT. Throw all the... Hey, if you go to mp3s.noagendanotes.com, it's an open directory of every single MP3... I have created since that systems exist, which is quite a few, but also all the .srt files. Throw it into your AI. Throw it in there. Find stuff. Block it. Whatever. The fact is, you can throw it in. You can also, I want to find something, and someone else could build something. I want to find something specifically. This is what I'm for. So I don't care that she wants to, that she wants to use all these things we have developed for what I think are awful things, but I wish you would get someone to do it already. Brookings must have $100 million. Build something. No, it helps everybody.
It's got to be more than that. I bet you they got tons of money. I think there's a naivety.
Ooh, another French word.
Naivete.
Benjamin, yes, will be so proud of you. Raison d'être, naivete. What else?
You know, I'm reading Jacques Ellul. I mean, it's just all oozing out now.
I know. I'm reading Jacques Cousteau. So it's good.
So I think there's a sort of naivete amongst, I don't know how old Victoria is, but she seems young.
She seems very young from the picture. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking that there is just a naivety of whatever, there's a naivety of trust in the establishment. And I'm going to say that, you know, people who are old enough to remember, you don't even have to go back.
I just looked up Brookings Institution, their form 990, $195 million in the last year they brought in. They have $568 million in assets. Build something.
How about a boost? Give us a boostergram. How about it? Like,
boost. Come on, Big A, boost us. Exactly.
But I'm thinking that you don't have to be old enough to go back to like Gulf of Tonkin level government fueled misinformation.
Another good one.
You can just go back. You can just go back to something as recent as Syrian gas attacks, or
the white helmets, anything,
Hunter
Biden laptop, Russian disinformation,
or if you want to go back to something just that's super uncontroversial, how about the lack of WMDs in Iraq? I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Aluminum
tubes.
Do you think for one second that if the State Department under George Bush had access to some sort of system that could instantly send out a bat signal to flag all the podcasts that were critical of the idea that there were WMDs in Iraq, do you think that they would have hesitated for one second to do that? Of course they would have done it. And it was completely bogus and untrue. But that's if you build this system, this is what I've tried to say over and over and over. The terrible idea in this, the unfortunate thing in this country, in the United States, is what I'm talking about.
It's every country.
Yeah. But the left right bull crap, it ends up pushing things forward that is in nobody's interest. And so it's like, well, my guys are in charge right now, so I'm going to try to silence all the other guys. And you end up building a system to where when the power flips and now you're on the other side, yeah. you get screwed by the thing you built.
But that's only terrible. With centralized systems. So I really am advocating, and I will contact her if possible. I say, would you please let me give you a little tour of what is possible? Everything, pretty much everything she says on the list is possible, and I welcome it.
A Zoom meeting. You're going to have a Zoom meeting.
Yes, we're going to pump the brakes and have a Zoom meeting. I really am for this. Put some money into this thing and use it how you find appropriate. That's totally cool. You can build that.
I would use that dashboard.
I would
search stuff for it.
Yeah, but I mean, predetermined, whatever you want to do, that it's all good. And then when it flips around, then you can flip your system around. It's not possible to build this for everybody. And that is because of the unfortunate nature of RSS and the unfortunate nature of a richly diversified hosting environment, which includes IPFS. So that genie is out of the bottle. But if you feel that you need to protect the vulnerable people, then please stop writing and wasting your $195 million a year and come over here and put some money into the ecosystem and build something. I mean, I'm extending my hand here.
Oh, you open palm.
Open palm.
Yes.
Anyway, quite enough of that, I believe. Let's talk about subscriptions because now I've been keeping my eye on what Buzzsprout did. Because as you know, I have a vested interest in moving away from PayPal on No Agenda, just because it's a very weak link in the chain. We do have a Lightning node, and as soon as the Lightning, and this was from Ibex, it already works the way we want it to. It's a great solution for people if you want to accept open donations, or you can even set preset amounts.
Wait, pause, stop. Are you saying that your Ibex stuff is up and running now? It's functional?
It's like functional.
You've rolled it out?
We have not promoted it yet. And the reason why is because I would prefer it to also accept KeySend, and it doesn't accept KeySend yet. I want people to be able to use the 2.0 app. So this is the shoehorn I'm using against Ibex. It's like, you know, because we'll bring them on this show, we'll promote them, anything you want, we'll talk about it on No Agenda, we'll get other podcasters to use it, but you got to have KeySend enabled so that I can receive boostograms. And they're having, I don't know, development is slow, and I respect that. It's okay. But my point is, we need other systems for value for value. Now, PayPal is, of course, you can do an open PayPal like we have here as well, open PayPal donation. You can put your note in there, which has also become a problem because PayPal shortened the field that you can put a note in, which is very annoying, and we have no control over that.
How long is it, Dina?
It's like 150 characters. It's not even a tweet length.
A boostergram is longer than that.
Exactly. But it's very rare. There is not really many, and please don't email me. There are not many easy systems comparable to PayPal's subscription that you can set up your subscription. Some people do.
Build it yourself.
Right. And I'm very intrigued by what Buzzsprout has done because it links right into, Apple Pay and Google's pay system. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm still not exactly, I don't think I can explain or push a 15% fee through to my podcast partner, even though I'm told that it's comparable to everything else. It may be comparable to or better than Patreon, but I don't see how it can be lower than PayPal. But regardless, I would love to have an open system that we can put into podcasting 2.0 apps that can use any backend system. And I have two requirements for it to be value for value. One is the amount has to be open. Some people want to send when people send a dollar, we actually lose money on it. I mean, that's almost rude. It's almost rude, but it's okay. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. I want it to be Bitcoin. I want it to be anything that we choose it to be. It has to be open. And in the case of my vision for podcasting, value for value, I would like the splits to be honored in this, because that is truly something that is unique to our version in podcasting 2.0 of value for value, is the splits can flow through, because I feel if we go a subscription amount route and leave the app developers out of the system, then we've made a mistake. And currently, you know, there's no subscription system that can value a split architecture where the podcaster can determine what can go to other people. Now, that may not work with fiat fund coupons and dollars, but if we implement a subscription system into podcasting 2.0, it would be really, really, really beautiful to take into account a version of the splits, which we already have, that can be incorporated. And I know that you've been talking to people about doing exactly this.
Yeah, and we're going to have Tom on the show soon. As soon as we've got
Tom from Buzzsprout.
Yeah, cool. From Buzzsprout, because you know, their vision is to have that be, you know, a something that is standardizable, that could become open. So me and him talked about it this week and hashed out a bunch of ideas, and it was great. Great discussion. And so he's going to come on and we're going to like just brainstorm about it on the board meeting here soon, and try to see if we can, you know, sort of come up with a framework or an open way to do this, where basically what they built can just become sort of a standard that everybody can adopt. And I think after talking to him the other day, I think it's very doable. And I think it would be very, I think there's a way to do it where the apps, don't have to, again, re-architect some new thing. Because so the way that their system works, and I did this on the Pod News Weekly Review show. So I opened up my Castomatic, I hit the funding button, which in Castomatic is down there toward the bottom on the right. So if you have a funding tag in your feed and you hit the button, it'll pop up a web view that goes to whatever the funding page is. And so since James and Sam had their
subscription had their, set up?
Yeah, their Buzzsprout subscription page in the funding tag, it opened. So it opened in a web view in the app.
Oh, cool.
And right there it said, do you want to subscribe? And what level, like $3, $5, $7, $10, whatever, give me some options.
That's a problem there. Yeah.
Okay. It is. So, but I'm just talking through the experience.
Sure.
I go down, I choose the $10 and I hit subscribe, and it comes up. It's like, do you want to do Apple Pay or do you want to do a credit card or whatever? I hit Apple Pay because I've already got that set up. Hit it. Face ID'd me. Boom. Done. Back to, and then I hit okay. I'm back in Castomatic. I never actually left Castomatic.
So right. Which is the whole point. That's the whole point.
Yeah. So the web nature of this thing is the only way that I see that this could work.
If I can just interrupt, I'm just looking at what you said just now. I see a choose a fan emoji. Where's my note go? I don't see a note in this Buzzsprout thing. So I did what you just described on Pod News Weekly Review. Right. It opens up the supporter, become a supporter, $3, $5, $8, $10. Choose a fan emoji, name, email, then my credit card. We're missing an important part here, which is notes.
There might be a note.
Important. So I just want to, and the only reason I'm saying this is because Dvorak and I developed this over 15 years. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. We know what's needed.
So like I said, we're going to have Tom on. So we'll talk about this more with him. But this is my feeling. Tom did not tell me this, but this is my feeling. Is that what you see right now was not an MVP, not a minimum product, but that was the thing that they could, that they felt confident in order to make it where things did not go south. Because if you come out of the gate and you put in something like an empty box where somebody can type their own amount,
right,
you immediately have support problems because you have people that accidentally type $2,000 and they're like, oh crap, I need to roll that back. What do I do? Like, I think the incarnation that it is right now was probably the safe launch technique.
Oh yeah, and no, then it's
we'll incre- go
it's,
forward.
There's a lot of forward. It's incredibly hard, this kind of stuff. Absolutely, we saw PayPal struggle enormously, and I could just tell you where this leads, which is why I like Lightning, which is why I want this implemented in Lightning as well. I'm PayPal all the time. We get people say, hey, you know, all of a sudden, my payment is under review. I mean, you have to do know your customer. You have to all kinds of stuff, terrorism financing. When someone does it from overseas, you get all kinds of issues. It's a hard business to be in the fiat subscription business. It's very, very hard. Yeah. And kudos to them for doing it at all.
Well, I think so when we can sort of nail down a framework when it comes on. But I think my takeaway from our discussion was that it's not only doable, but I think it's doable in a great way that keeps the apps from getting in trouble with any app store policies or anything like that. Like, I think this could be a really good thing. So anyway, I think it's great. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I see a bleak future for any payment systems in any app store, just in general.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, so, and what I mean by that is when you open up a web view, the way the app stores force the apps is they can't take payments in the app through, they can't sell things in the app.
No, I understand. It has to open a web browser.
It has to open a web browser, and this does. You know, like, this is a web-based transaction.
But, you know, that's a very simple policy change to make.
It is, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what that happens. I don't know that the app stores are willing to go to the mat on something like that now with the current political climate as it is.
It's a foregone conclusion in my mind. I mean, the app stores are evil. They're evil. End of story.
They're also under a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah. Like, well, then they should allow progressive web apps. Apple should allow it to be done properly, but they won't because they're evil. Ultimately, they're greedy and evil, and that's the master they serve, and that's okay. But let's not...
Mammon. Yes.
What?
Mammon. Yes.
Mammon?
The money. That's like the old you know, biblical term for money, yes.
Mammon?
They serve their master. Yeah, they serve their master, Mammon. Mammon. His wealth regarded as an evil influence or false object of worship and devotion.
Well, it is. and that's okay. It's just, I get so sad when I see people trying to get around exactly this problem. Because all Apple has to do is say, nah, I don't feel like it today. Or Google. And, you know, seeing as Google is, by the way, did I not say that this is a quagmire, it's a piece of crap, and it's a big mistake, this whole ChatGPT? Did you see what happened to Google?
Now, I heard something about there was a fail on launch or something, but I never saw it. I don't know the details.
They named it. They named their chat bot Barf. Bard. I'm sorry, no, Bard. It's Bard. Bard.
Okay.
Bard, but we just call it Google Barf. And the first question that was asked gave an incorrect answer. The stock price drops 9%.
Oh.
9%. And it's bull. Now they're fighting over bull. Every engineer knows that what is happening here is not really spectacular. It's a parlor trick. I mean, especially if it can't even get the answers right, which is always going to be subjective. That's why you in a search you get a list of links. Well, here's what most people clicked on. Okay. But now you have something coming back and saying, well, I think this is what's happening. This is the answer to your question. Well, that's going to be wrong lots of times. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah. If you take, that could be a way to, that could be the ultimate CYA. If you think about it, like if you change your algorithm to just generate an answer based on a quote model, well, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. We just need to tweak the model.
Yeah.
I know it's giving you wrong information, but we just need to tweak the model. It's like,
it's going to destroy these companies.
Somebody getting killed. Oh, we just need to tweak the model.
I mean, it's the demise of Google because they now are running after something that they know. And Sundar Pichai, he's not a marketing guy. He's a nerd. He's a technology guy. He knows what real AI looks like, real machine learning. And it's not really anything even appropriate for consumers. So this parlor trick of taking, I mean, come on, man, ask Jeeves, only, you know, they improved it. Great. Well, you're getting a real world answer by something that pretends to be a human being, and everyone is just going to fall for this, but it's not going to deliver the profits to them. And Microsoft, it's going to be interesting because they want to put this into all of their products. So, you know, you open up Word and you just say, type an apology letter, you know, type a resume, and it'll just start to get it all going for you. And everyone will be kind of the same NPC, non-playing character, drone, and you'll have all the same answers and all the same information. There'll be no, and the people that'll stand out will be the ones that are odd.
So I don't know about you. I don't know if you've had any experience with this, but it's become popular now within Outlook and Gmail and all these different email clients to, if when you begin to type a reply, it'll want to like auto-complete your reply for you.
Yeah, I don't use any of that. I don't have any of it.
Okay, well, it's very common now. So you'll start to say, somebody will send you a thing and say, hey, can you get this information for me? And you say, and you start to reply, I'm in the middle of something right now. And maybe, and it'll suggest to you that you autocomplete it with, but I'll get to that here in a few minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Of course.
So that's this, like if you take that to the next level and have it auto-generate an entire email to you, that would be sort of like this sort of model. But the way that what I've begun doing is, and this is sort of like subconscious at the beginning, I would get these suggestions of replies and I would immediately see the suggestion.
And you see that it's fake, that it's generated.
And I would say, yeah, and I would reject it because even though it's what I was about to say, I don't want the other person to think that I just hit a button and didn't actually think about what I was saying. Like, I don't want to give them a canned response because I don't want it to appear rude or as if I don't care.
This started with, I'm driving right now. I'll call you later.
Yeah, that, yes.
Which to me is like, why don't you just turn your phone off then? You know?
Right.
Or ever hear of hands-free? Bluetooth? Anyway,
yes, perfect example.
Anyway, long arc around all that. Let's go to Social Interact API endpoint. Very excited about this.
Yes, it is now, live. It's in the
now. Why did you build this, and what's the idea, and what is it? Because it seems like something dynamite.
Well, I built it. Built is a little bit not the right terminology.
You built it. It's like I invented podcasting. You built the API. Trust me, it's the same thing.
Okay. Social Interact wasn't in the API response. It just wasn't there. So it needed to be there to begin with. It was just missing. It was just a tag that had not gotten around to yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it needed to be there. So, and there was nothing in the whole chain. There was no, it was not being aggregated. It was not being.
Oh, so it's API. only in someone's feed if it's in there and that's not, it wasn't even in the database.
Yeah. Nothing. None of
oh,
that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay. Yeah,
none
yeah.
of that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So I had
no. No, parser, no, the, one, no wonder this wasn't off the ground yet. Now well, I understand the problem. I didn't know that. I didn't know that the root post
fault.
Was not.
That's
no,
it.
It's not your
fault.
No, I didn't know that the root. I would have gone easier on everybody. I didn't know that the root post wasn't available in the API. Pardonnez-moi.
Well, I did. So I had to go and put it into Party Time so that it would go in, get aggregated and then build the tables. And this kind of goes into something else we can talk about too.
The bridge.
Which is no, which is deleting old episodes when they appear in, when they disappear.
Oh yes, I have this on my list too, so you can explain that to everybody how easy it is.
We can do a mashup here.
Okay. All right.
So the way that the table structure in the database is for the API is for the index is we have a news feeds table. And this terminology came from the initial schema came from Freedom Controller. So some of this terminology is a little weird.
I love that there's legacy in there. It's beautiful. It's a lot of legacy.
So the podcasts table is called news feeds. The episodes table is called items for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So, NF items. It's called NF items. So the news feeds table has a foreign key relationship with the NF items table. So the NF items table references an ID in the news feeds table. Mm-hmm. And then, so that there's linkage between the two, there's a relationship
episode and the feed and the podcast itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then a whole lot of tables hang off of each one of those. So there's a thing called NF underscore value. Mm-hmm. Well, those are the value blocks, mm-hmm. and they have a foreign key relationship. That table, the NF underscore value, has a foreign key relationship with the news feeds table so that we can pull a news feed and then also do a join in the SQL in order to get the value blocks. But the value blocks themselves are stored in a different table. Mm. These sorts of table relationships are important because you can have a sane schema and separate concerns, and you can also update various bits of data in different tables without necessarily locking tables in the other parts of the database.
Could you explain, just so I've heard this term, first of all, having run some companies and worked with DBAs, mm-hmm. Database design, management, coaxing, massaging, it is as much voodoo and magic and experience and maybe even religion as it is technology, is my experience.
Yes.
And yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do things exactly the same and one database will behave differently from the other one. What is this locking business? Why does it occur? And is it good? Is it bad? And can you just give us a short primer on the locking of tables?
Well, so if you think about it, these are called atomic operations. So you have to be sure that when you do a transaction to a database, you have to be sure that the data is not going to change in the middle of the change you're trying to make. So if you have parallel operations going on, if you have one process that's trying to update a table and another process that's trying to delete records out of a table, who wins? Do they they can't both happen at the same time, because okay. then you have corruption. So you have to lock at least some portion of the table, maybe not the entire table, but you have to lock the records that could potentially be changed. So you use something called a query. I'm losing the terminology, but it's like a query plan. I'm sorry, a query plan. So the query plan, ends up estimating what table rows are going to be affected by a certain action. And in certain circumstances, if it sees that there's a potential for a conflict, it will lock those particular rows so that you don't get database corruption.
Okay.
Locking is critical to safety. Mm-hmm. It's a safety mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get around. Yeah. And table locking is something you have to avoid at all costs. And so most of the design of a database, other than sheer performance, is trying to get around some of these things like locking so that you don't hamstring yourself. So we have the NF items, NF items table. So just like NF underscore value, mm-hmm. there's also an NF underscore value, an NF items underscore value that has a relationship back to the NF items table. Mm. And so those are episode level split blocks, value blocks. And so, what I did was created a new table. I'm just going through this because I think it's beneficial for people to understand
how beneficial. This stuff works. I'm enjoying it very. I'm enjoying it a lot more than the discussion about fees and splits in the last show.
Okay. Well, good. This is good. Okay. So then what I did was I went in and created an NF underscore social interact table. And then that has a foreign key relationship to the NF items table. So you have an NF items, and then you have a relationship to NF items underscore social interact. So as Party Time reads a feed, parses it, sees there's a social interact tag in it, it inserts a record or updates a record in the NF items underscore social interact table to insert that entry in there. That is the initial, that's you setting up the schema. Okay. Then you go in there and change and make the modifications to Party Time. It's like you've got your schema now. Then you go and change in the parser to add in the discovery, parsing, and database insertion of the social interact tag. So now you've got things populating in that table in the database. Then the final step is to go in there and look and actually change the endpoint. Well, intermediary step, you go and you find the lower level database call in the API's sort of low level functions itself. There's a thing called a function called get items by feed ID 3. That's the name of the function. And that is responsible for pulling for you give it a podcast index ID, feed ID, and it gives you back all of the items that go that all the episodes that belong to it.
Okay.
As a structure. Then and that function is referenced by the API endpoint, which is slash episodes by feed ID. So episodes by feed ID calls get items by feed ID 3, and that's where it gets its data. So you go in there and change get episodes by feed ID 3 to also do a left join on the table, on this new table, NF items underscore social interact. Now it's getting the social interact tags back with it along in the same query that it gets the episodes with. So you're still only doing one database call. Now you've got this extra data that
there's
you're
a lot
indexing.
Going on in the background there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how does deleting an episode screw it all up?
Well, okay. So
let me set the use case so people understand. Because I am now in charge of incoming customer support, which is info@podcastindex.org. And basically people go, delete my show. And that's kind of it. Or I deleted this episode. You're still hosting it.
Have you noticed the increase in the level of people asking for stuff to be removed? It's actually a lot more than it used to be.
I have.
I don't know why.
I'm not quite sure what's going on. I do get a lot of, Buzzsprout said to call you.
I get a lot of that.
Buzzsprout, what are you telling them? It's like, Buzzsprout, you said, because people will delete it. I think what's happening is, for whatever reason, people are not liking some of their episodes. I think some people are moving to different models, maybe subscription model, and they want to delete certain older episodes, and they delete it, and then they, you know, for whatever reason, they find out that it's still it doesn't work, but it's listed in Podcast Index. And, you know, they assume, A, that we've stolen it. You can feel the undertone. A lot of this is, why are you hosting this? Why is it still there? Why? You know, it's like, they don't know what, and I understand, so we're very cool. But it literally is because we have not, because most of these, we won't refresh for, you know, I don't know what the frequency is of refreshing most of these feeds. When it's refreshed, then I think it all changes. Then those episodes are removed, or maybe not. But that is what seems to have to take place. But that operation seems to be complicated.
It is complicated. And I will tell you that it's complicated mostly by financial constraints. We cannot, if we had the budget to throw lots of money at a huge database instance, I would fix this with power.
Okay, question.
With just more power.
All right, stop.
Okay.
What do we need?
Oh, no, I mean, like, in order to do this in close to real time,
yeah,
we would need a very, very big database.
Okay, that is
that we can't afford.
I know we can't afford it, but I'd like to know, can you put a number on it? Is it $1,000 a month? Is it $10,000 a month? I mean, just whatever you think it might be, more or less.
I can't put a number on it without doing some research.
Can we do some research on that? Because that would be a great thing to ask for.
Yeah, sure. So because you scale vertical first, and then before you scale horizontal. I mean, you just go, you make your database bigger. That's the way you solve problems of this type. And let me describe to you what I mean by this type. So, the reason that we can't do this in real time, like, so what Daniel J. Lewis said, he's like, we just download the feed and just replace what's already there. That's not the way it works, because we have the NF items table that has about 110 million episodes in it. There's about 25 to 35,000 database transactions a minute currently on average in the index. Mm-hmm. And we have 10 aggregators. So we have aggregators 0 through 9. They're all aggregating and inserting data simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have 10 different streams of database connections that are happening. So it peaks out maybe 40,000 transactions a minute, typically. At that volume, it doesn't take but just a few attempts at deleting records out of that size of a table to where it could potentially lock large portions of the table. When that happens, if one aggregator tries to do a large delete, let's just say that it hits a podcast that has 20,000 episodes on it. There are some in there. Mm-hmm. This podcast has 20,000 episodes, and let's just say that 1,000 of them disappear because this is some crazy weird podcast. So all of a sudden you're going to delete 1,000 records out of the table. If it locks a large portion of the table, all 9 other aggregators then have to halt and wait for it to finish. And if it doesn't finish fast enough, they could time out and just have to restart.
I'm super excited by this conversation. I thought I was going to fall asleep, but I really, this has become very exciting actually to listen to for a number of reasons. One, doesn't blockchain solve this?
Blockchain, yes.
Blockchain solves it. Two.
Noster. We're going to put our mouth on Noster.
Noster can solve all this. It goes away overnight. Give us some Bitcoin, Jack Dorsey. If you had to start over again and do a different database design, would that make a difference? Or is this just a fact of life in database?
That's a good question, and I don't know how to really answer it. It's possible that if I had to go back and do this over, I just don't know, put everything as it is now and put all the episode data only the episode data in a NoSQL database. That's possible. Mm-hmm. I still don't know if that's ideal. A lot of this stuff takes trial and error to figure out whether or not to figure out not whether it's stable. The problem with NoSQL is it's eventually consistent, mm-hmm. and that's right. Eventual consistency with something like this is really a problem. You have to have some guarantees.
Is this what those Plesk guys figured out?
What guys?
Was it Plesk? What's the name of that company that has a data? Forget about it. This is really interesting. I'm glad that you're laying this out, because people have no, I mean, even people who are in the business clearly don't really, I didn't know. Daniel J. Lewis didn't have all the pieces together. This is an interesting problem.
Yeah. And I think Daniel J. Lewis uses Mongo. So he uses a NoSQL database, and he's not constrained by schema, but the downside of NoSQL is you have a promise of eventual consistency. That's not good enough for what we're doing.
Right.
We have to have a guarantee of consistency. And so, like, he's doing stats.
Right. So very different kind of use case. Okay. I would love to know what, and I think you should do that. Let's find out what it costs and let's figure out a way to make that happen. Let's see what it, let's, I mean, we know kind of our budget and we're not paying ourselves. So this all goes into the systems, but everybody would benefit.
Well, that goes back to sort of the financial question. Cause you have like, if you look at what we have coming in as income, so here's how, you know, we started this thing saying, okay, we want to make sure that, so what we've promised people, we made a promise to people that we were going to have an API that was free forever. And that was the promise. So in order to,
that's all we promised. Yeah, we promised controversy. We promised all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Unwritten.
With regards to an API, we promised that we would have an API. And that it was, yes, you're right. We did promise controversy. And so we promised an API that would be free for anybody's use forever. I think that's the language we use on the website.
Yeah.
And in order to fulfill that promise, what we did was we said, okay, as soon as we have more money in income than we're spending in expenses each month, we're going to stash that money in the bank for as long as it takes to build up X number of years of hosting fees where if something happened and one of us got sick or something happened and the project got derailed, we would have an X amount of years of runway where even if we had no income whatsoever, the API would continue to function. Mm-hmm. And so in order to make that happen, we have to keep our expenses low enough to where we're still building money. So if we're putting a few hundred dollars in the bank after expenses every month, it's going to take, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to build up a decent runway.
Well, we don't know yet what it would take to supercharge our database.
We don't. But that was the financial thinking that we engaged in.
We support a lot of different things. You know, we're still, you know, LN Pay. We're still paying a fee amount for that keeps a couple of apps running with wallets, which, you know, that may go away over time. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that we put into this to make the whole ecosystem work.
Right. And I just want to make that. I just think that's important that people understand that we're running the database and everything. We're running the API now, but that's not the only concern. We have two concerns: run the database, run the API now, and make sure that the API can run for years in the future. And so for that reason, we cannot spend all the money that we take in. We have to save some. Mm-hmm. And that means that we have to, even though we, like last month, you know, I think if you added up, it was like $2,000. We had $2,000 of income last month and we had $1,200 of expenses, that we can't spend $2,000 because we get $2,000, because then one month goes by and we don't have enough income. We're out.
Well,
we're out of the game.
Is this a moment we can thank a few people who have been supporting the index?
Heck yeah.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk about Greenlight for a moment before we wrap it up for today. And I wanted to start off with a big thank you to he did this last year as well, Sir Onimus of Dogpatch in Lower Slobovia, who is now I don't know who this is other than he donates every month to No Agenda, and it's always through the mail. It's always cash. It's always from literally from a mailbox on the street. And he sent to our PO box, and when I saw this, I mean, I know you had the same, cause I sent you a picture. I was like, oh man, $3,006 all in cash with a note for podcasting 2.0. Thank you to all that are working to keep free speech available to the masses. Wow. And so it's not our database money, but wow. Humbled by this. I think he did something similar last when we started, right? Didn't he do something?
He sent us $4,000 in cash last year.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always an odd number. He literally sent $2 bills. $2 bills. So I don't know. And I never figure out the numbers. But thank you very much, Sir Anonymous of Dog Patch and Lois Lebovia. That's so meaningful to us. And that goes right into our savings, into our bank for the years that we want to keep it running.
Yeah, and we're doing taxes right now, and we literally had this discussion this morning. It's like we'll just take out what we need to pay the taxes, and everything else just stays in the bank.
Yeah, so everyone understands. Like, it's a pass through LLC, so money that comes in, literally, Dave and I are taxed on it ourselves. So we only take out that we have to pay in our personal income taxes.
Right. The IRS treats it as if we made money, even though it's still in a bank account that we haven't done. We don't even have it.
And on the node.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm. All right.
That's huge. Yeah. Thank you so much,
Sir Anonymous. All right. A couple of lit boosts, boostograms that came in. We have, although he will be coming in later, we have 5,015 sats from Comic Strip Blogger. And he says, we know he'll come in later as he is the delimiter. Solution to your large database problem is cockroachlabs.com/product, affordable cloud native elastic scale distributed database.
Yeah. How much does this cost?
I don't know. I don't know. We're going to find out, but we need to know. Well, thank you, Comic Strip Blogger. We'll find out. We'll find out. We have 33,369 from Booberry. This is all within the lit time frame of the show. And he has a disparaging comment about Twit, which I'm just not going to read. No, there's no need for that. 33,333 from Eric PP. Thank you very much, Chimp. 100% XDDD. Got him.
Okay. 100%.
100%. 36,912. We have Chad F. 3,333. Can I get the JCD You Will Obey jingle?
You will obey.
Of course.
You will obey. You will obey.
We have Lavish with 6,666. Incentive boost. Thank you. Mike Dell with 25,000. Now we're talking. Round two of Blueberry's PC 2.0 tags in progress. Go podcasting, he says.
Go podcasting!
We have 33,333 from SU Pipe Pipe CD.
Okay.
I'm not going to type that in my command line. Loving the podverse love. Oh, of course. Well,
SUCD. Yeah, from the socials. Yeah. We love all of our apps.
Chad F, 3333. Again, remember, Adam, that NA is a comedy show, so it doesn't count as a political podcast. This is true. We have Moritz from Konshax with 13,579. Our evolution from a stats package to the home of value for value creators starts next week with the integration of Podcaster Wallet. Beyond excited. Oh, we got that together. You hooked him up with
some API keys. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. That would be a great on-ramp for value for value. And by the way, today, as of right now, I have the stats on the standby, 11,871 feeds with value blocks, up about 30 from yesterday. It used to be one or two a day. Now we're 20 or 30 a day, new value for value podcast. So very excited about that. Steve Webb, he is the OG Godcaster, Sir OG Godcaster, with, a Super Striper boost, 77,777.
Whoa.
Just saying, hey. Oh, and inviting the PC 2.0 community to join the Lifespring family and reading through the Bible in a year at audiobible.link. Would love to have you join us in our 13th season. Go podcasting. Go Godcasting.
Go podcasting! Now,
does that mean that he's read through the Bible 13 times?
Or yes. Yes. 13. Okay. Yeah. He does a whole year. And he's done it. Well, he was one of... The Godcasters were very early to understand what was going on with podcasting. So
I think Buzzsprout got their start as a Godcaster repository, I think. No, they did. Like
I believe it. No, I believe it. I believe it. What was I going to say? Do you remember Lillian Axe?
Do you remember
the band Lillian Axe?
No.
Well, it's interesting because they've released 10 albums in their career, and they're in the Louisiana Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And when they first came out, their very first video, I debuted on Headbangers Ball. And so they have a new video coming out. And
they're old now.
Oh yeah, they're my age. They're ancient. and they have a new video coming out. And they sent me a note and said, "Hey, man, well, we love what you're doing. And we'd love for you to intro our new video, to put in the video, reminding people that 35 years ago, you premiered us on Headbangers Ball. And, you know, we'd love to do that with our new video." And
are you going to do it?
Well, so here's what's interesting. I'm looking at this video. I'm like, I got to look at, is this a Satan band or what is it? And until I got all the way through the video, I'm like, oh, I look them up. Yeah, you know, Christian band. I didn't know that. And so, of course, I'm going
to
do that.
From Womb to Tomb is the name of the album. Yes.
Yeah. So, of course, I'm going to do that. It was just interesting that I had no idea that they were a Christian rock band. And you wouldn't know necessarily until you see the video, which is pretty funny. They still have humor. They still got humor.
So you are gonna do it?
Of course. Yeah, of course I'm gonna do that. Hey everybody, remember me? I'm old.
Less hair.
That's right. 2121 from Tone Wrecker. Podverse.fm is snappy with this latest update. Props to Mitch and team. Sir Spencer 6969. Love all the work the board and its members have put into the live experience. Live Items first birthday is coming up. We are excited to celebrate with Dave on a Bowls with Buds at the end of the month. More details to come. Green heart emoji.
That's right. That's right. I'll be guesting.
Nice. Let me see. Tone Wrecker sent a short row of ducks with a testing. Thank you all for the tests. I think that you have everything from there on out. So let's thank the people with the boostergrams that came in.
Well, we got a PayPal.
one singular PayPal. The one.
From our buddy Todd. He says, "Hey guys, Todd C. I want to thank you for all the hard work you're doing here. Let's keep the features coming. Mike and I are planning what our next round of implementations will be. For podcasters missing out on fun, migrate to Blueberry today. Go podcasting.
And he gave us $100.
Oh, nice. Oh, that qualifies as a baller.
Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
My dog hates that jingle. She thinks they're singing Shock Caller, so she always runs away when I play it. Big baller, Shock Caller. No, Daddy, no.
We got 54321 from our buddy Roy.
Oh,
Breeze. We're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about Roy and his mm-hmm. endeavors in a moment, for sure.
Yeah, we will. One of my endeavors is to get Roy back on the show so he can talk to us about it.
Well, he's about ready. He's got something to talk about finally.
Mm-hmm. Gene Bean, 1337, Elite Booster, Castomatic. He says, "I don't think removing emails were blowing it. Buzzsprout, among other, can put the email back in for 24 hours or another small amount of time to facilitate the validation."
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, we've learned that. Didn't know it. And and interestingly, we had a support email come in. It's still causing support, increased support actions. Can you remove this? Do you mind just sending this from the email address that is in your feed? And I see that you're at Buzzsprout. You can have that put back into your feed. Reply comes in. You can click on our email, on our webpage, and see that it's the email. You know, it's like people don't even want to do it.
Yeah.
People also think that we're, like Amazon or something. Like we're, and I can't blame them for thinking that we're a Silicon Valley company. But even so, wow, privileged much? I mean it. People are very rude.
Todd from Northern Virginia, 33333 through Breeze, and he says, "What did I miss? Beef milkshake? I pray this is some sort of inside joke." No, it's not an inside joke. It is literally a milkshake
made of beef.
Made from beef protein. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. It's delicious.
And it tastes like hamburger?
No, it tastes like chocolate. What is this stuff called?
Alex Gates turned you on this, didn't he? He was telling me about this.
No. Dan Benjamin did. Equip Prime. Is that what this is called? Equip. Yes, prime protein grass-fed beef isolate protein powder from Equip Foods.
And you throw it in water?
Water, milk. I put in milk, yeah, mm-hmm. milk and ice cubes and like some...
Ice cubes, milk and ice cubes.
Yeah, it makes like a slushy. It's good. Mm. It tastes like ice cream.
Are you still eating milkshake. Like actual beef, like the mm-hmm. KNC stuff? Okay, good.
Yeah, this is my supercharge. This is my super beef charge. Yeah. It's the Equip. Yeah, Equip is the name of the thing. Coupon code podcasting 2.0.
Yo.
Gene Bean, again, 2222 through Castomatic, says, talking about where to put Mastodon comments, I wonder if Todd could partner with Vivaldi or similar. They're offering Mastodon accounts to all their users. Possible. Gene Bean again, 22222 through Castomatic. He says, really enjoyed hearing what Todd and crew are doing. I also agree that it would be awesome if some 2.0 features came to Overcast. I love that app. I do too. And I'm hoping that the first thing he implements, other than I think transcripts is always good for accessibility, is live, because I know that he does a live.
He would use it himself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Harv Hat 10101, a binary boost through KiraCaster. No note. Thank you, Harv Hat. Chaos 99, 5,000 sats. And he says, another great episode.
Thank you.
Mere Mortals, our buddy Kyron 11111 through Fountain. He says, I'm so damn pumped. It feels like we've ditched the skis and hijacked a snowmobile. 100%.
Satchel of Richards for the win. Nice.
100%. I think what you meant was absolutely.
Absolutely. Kyron. Yes. Completely. Yes. Full completely.
On. Bill.Prague, 1,000 sats through Podfriend. He says, testing. Had no idea Podfriend is abandoned. Looks like it's still working. I don't think it's abandoned. Not abandoned. I think he's rewriting it here.
It still works very well, actually.
Bill Prague again, 1,000 sats through Podfriend. He says, there is a protocol that you use for some time now that has private public keys you can use to log into 100+ apps, and all your followers are there. All your comments are also there. Cross-app comments? This boost was made possible thanks to Brian and Hive. Looks like Podfriend is not letting me boost over 1,000. Need to spin those sats.
It must be so. I know how this feels when you've had a technology that's been around for a long time and it works, and then people come along with something called Noster and just pisses you off.
It does.
I feel you, Brian.
Bill Prague. Again, 1,000 through Podfriend. He says, looks like I have to boost 10 times 1,000 sats. Pity I like Podfriend on the browser. It was playing video. Man, he's giving the ode to Podfriend, but Podfriend still lives, man.
Yeah.
It's not dead, okay?
It does.
Rob Suzuki through Fountain, 2421. He says, thanks for your value to the podcast movement. Greetings from Dominican Republic.
Oh, hello, Dominican Republic.
Yep. 3,000 from Farscapian through Fountain. No note. Cass Beeland, 3690 through Fountain. He says, I have a question about the splits. I was happy. Adam's favorite.
How do you calculate
them? Topic. Yes. I was happily streaming 17 sats a minute. I think calculate the first split percentage goes to the highest percent. Oh, God.
No. Don't take me there. Don't take me there. Don't take me down that road. No.
Are you banning this question?
No, I'm not banning it. Of course not.
I think calculate the first split percentage goes to the highest percentage, and then calculating down. Streaming less than one sat a minute is not a thing. So I see on a show 22 sats a minute pop up. Don't mind the small difference. Oh, I'm so lost. Cass, send me an email. I can't do it. Yeah. It's too much.
I have a small complaint before I forget.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You know, I add a lot of podcasts manually for people who don't see the add button.
at the top of the web.
Yes, the one that says add.
Yes.
Can we change the sunflowers?
What?
I keep getting sunflowers in the caption. It's always the sunflowers. I don't trust it. I need something else.
I've never gotten sunflowers.
I get sunflowers all the time.
No, I get trumpets. I do every time.
I'll trade trumpets for sunflowers for a day, just for a day.
Clear your cookies. That's the universal.
Oh, clear your cookies. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're becoming a help desk guy. I'm getting so jaded.
When someone says, my episodes haven't updated, I'm going to say, clear your cookies.
That's what you should do. Yeah. Yeah. Reboot. Have you tried rebooting?
Rebooting.
See, this is where we're turning you into a help desk guy.
I am feeling good about it.
Every time when you get off a help desk call, you have to turn around and bitch to your coworkers about how stupid the person was. You're like, oh, you mean the add button at the top? It was hard to spot. Okay. Satoshi Stream 5552 through Fountain. It says, Benjamin at Fosdem was good. Yes, Benjamin Bellamy.
Yeah. We forgot to talk about that. Good job, Benjamin.
Yeah, great slideshow. Awesome. I chop and dropped and killed his numbers right after the show. But
sorry about that. I love where the bit where he goes, "This is not a podcast. This is a podcast," like a big RSS feed code.
Yeah.
Victoria needs to see that so she understands what's happening.
Dovi Das through Fountain. He says, "And due to precision issues, we should." Oh wait, this is a four. Okay, this is a multi-parter. Okay, here we go. I think I got it here. All of these are 10,000 sats. Dave seemed to suggest that we don't require splits to add up to a 100 because it's easy to make mistakes and produce a different total amount. Although I agree with this requirement shouldn't exist, I don't find this rationale convincing. Validation could be performed on the host side, as Adam mentioned, and the player side. A much better reason, in my mind, is the same as why companies don't limit number of shares to a 100. It would limit the maximum number of shareholders and the fractions they can own. Okay, Forrest. And due to precision issues, we should always prefer integers to decimal numbers in financial software. That's why Stripe API uses cents instead of dollars, for example. Finally, as a math teacher, I feel, and this makes me terrified for him to listen to the show. Finally, as a math teacher, I feel the most intuitive way of explaining splits to newcomers is by thinking of them as ratios, a concept familiar to most as it is found in many recipes. E.g., if Alice's, Bob's, and Charlie's splits are 4, 2, and 3 respectively, they will share the incoming sats in the ratios of 4 to 2 to 3. That is the way that a math teacher would explain it. You're right. And that's more confusing to me than percentages.
Oh, man.
All right, let me save you. I'm going to save you, okay?
Yeah.
Todd Cochran Boost, 50,000 sats.
There you go.
Just funded my wallet on Fountain with a debit card. So simple. Go podcasting.
Ooh.
Go podcasting!
You almost fell off the cliff. I had to save you.
Well, it's almost like if a split is traveling on a train at 17 sats per minute.
And the ratio is 2 to 3 to 6.
Thank you, Nathan G. Good line.
And thank you, Dovi Das. I appreciate that. I don't know. It's just confusing. Tone Wrecker, 22222 through Podverse. He says, wallet reloaded, slinging sats with abandoned, a boosting haiku.
I love slinging sats. Thank you.
Boost!
Very nice.
That was a haiku. Did you get
it? Yes, of course I got the haiku.
A haiku. Mm-hmm. That's our first boost.
I think it's our boost-a-coup.
Boost-a-coup.
Boost-a-coup. Yeah. I like it.
Borlaug, 25,000 sats through Podverse. He says, I can't thank you enough for all the work the two of you are doing for this project. This is the only board meeting I look forward to each week. Me and you both.
Ditto.
Yeah,
that's where I ended on the boost. And where's Comic Strip Blogger?
Comic Strip Blogger's right here. You already did him. Okay.
I did his new one, but not the regular one.
Okay. Comic Strip Blogger 33015. Dear Dave and Adam, the AI.cooking podcast. Present obeisances in acknowledgement to your safeguarding of free speech. I don't even know what this word is. Now you're using words that you know more English than I do. The AI.cooking podcast present obeisances in acknowledgement to your safeguarding of free speech, offering our fealty in the form of the part on the back sats. We implore you to keep abreast of the singularity by downloading our fortnightly show. A constant colloquy upon the state of humanhood. Podcasting is the medium of the people. Congenially yours, Gregory Foreman. Yo, CSV.
Thank you. Thank you, Comic Strip Blogger.
I tried to do the Twilight Zone guy. Was that coming through a little bit?
It would need a little more. Comic Strip Blogger. Just a comic stripper or a blogger? Now in AI, welcome.
Oh, I need to, I need to trail it off.
You need
more.
To try that. Two that just came in, 5,000 from Anonymous. Send Bitcoin boost to your favorite podcasters in Podverse plus Albi, hashtag Foss, and Dreb Scott, who just left the chat room, live boosting for Boost Boost. Can I get a 100% horn, please, with 222,222 sats. And there you go. We got it all.
Shaqala, 20 inch blades on the Impala.
No one understands exactly how Dreb Scott does it, but he does it.
Well, poor guy. He said they may posted with his like Cisco switch meltdown of epic proportions, like at his job.
At his job, yeah. We know.
Oh, it was a bad one. It was a bad one. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Boosters. We got some monthlies.
We do. We have Joseph Maraca, $5. Jeremy New, $5. Cameron Rose, $25. Lauren Ball, $24.20. Basil Phillips, $25. Podverse LLC, $50. Christopher Harabarek, $10. And Mitch Downey, $10.
Ah, thank you all very much. Value for value. If you'd like to learn more about that concept, value4value.info. This is the whole project is value for value. You just heard where our money goes, what we do with it, what we do with your money to make the project run, and how it benefits everybody. If you'd like to learn more, if you'd like to actually support us, go to podcastindex.org. Down at the bottom is a big red donate button. You can use that to send us fiat fund coupons. Also, we have a on-chain Bitcoin spot there, and nope, we have nothing came in, although people wanted it so badly. Hey man, you should have an on-chain Bitcoin. We need to scan a QR code to send you Bitcoin. Man, pretty much no. So
the only time people ever use it is to make sure that it gets used.
That it works. Dreb Scott. Dreb Scott, basically. Yeah. We'll test it to make sure it's being used. But of course, you can get any of the modern apps at newpodcastapps.com and use that to boost us. And of course, you want to see that it has value for value. But use any of them, really. There's so many different, it's all so personal, so many different apps. But that is the preferred way. Of course, you can always do it through PayPal. Thank you very much for supporting Podcasting 2.0, the podcast, which is really the gateway into the whole project. And now let's talk about Roy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't.
He literally came in almost on time. He said six months, and it's, mm-hmm. You know, it's been seven and a half months, but almost to the, he said it, and here he is with, Breeze SDK?
SDK, yep. Sure. And I'm hoping to have more. He's helping me and Alex to get up and running with it so that we can mess around with it. I'm hoping to get it, get my hands, you know, dirty with it. The one thing that I say initially, I've read it. I've looked at the sort of structure, the way everything's laid out. If I understand it correctly, it's extremely easy. Rust is a first-class citizen, which I like.
Can you explain what it is?
It looks like exactly what we thought it would be, which is a green light, the green light service on the back end, and Breeze providing the liquidity and everything on the front end. And the SDK looks like a set of libraries to interface your app with that service. And so you basically just, you initialize it with a key and call and basically start I guess, I don't know if it's a real node or a virtual node. I'm not sure. But essentially then you get back what looks like a handle that you can then just do things with.
And like you still haven't told us what it is.
Well, I mean, it's an SDK. I got no, but what software development kit?
No, I understand, but I know what it is. I just want to hear. Is it like a wallet? No.
Yeah, he says that it's not a wallet, but it looks like. You own the key. It looks like the first thing you do when I was looking at it earlier. The first thing you do is initialize your. Using these terms loosely.
Let me back up. Okay. It is a lightning node. I'm going to call it a virtual lightning node that you can use to send and receive lightning payments.
I think that's fair.
Fair?
Yeah. That's fair to me. I don't know. I think Roy's probably being like, no, y'all are idiots.
Well, I mean, what does it replace? It replaces centralized custody wallets.
Yes, it would replace something like Ellen Pay, Albi. It would replace the necessity to keep your wallet, to call in. You're not calling. You're not custodian. You're not. Your wallet is not custodial. You own it. The infrastructure that your wallet resides on and that the liquidity travels through, that is owned by somebody
else. That's a service, right? The liquidity. So it basically is taking away. Okay. For me, it would be great because I know that anything that comes in, if I had that as my, I could replace my Umbral wallet that I use to receive Boostergrams with this. And yes. The benefit is it would always work. Theoretically, but no one can just say, "Oh, Curry, that's it. We're done," because I own the keys to it, and I can also move it somewhere else if I want because I have the keys.
Right, you have the keys, and it's your keys, your coin. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. you can Sexy. Use their infrastructure without risking having anything ever taken away from you other than the service itself. And then if that happens, you just move it to your Umbral or
right.
You
and because it's an SDK, you can put it into your mobile app as a developer, and you can even send, but also receive Bitcoin on your mobile app because without necessarily having your mobile app open in the foreground, all of that stuff.
I kind of think of it like running your stuff on AWS, and all of your stuff is encrypted and only you have the keys. Mm-hmm. And if one day AWS decides to kick you off their service, well, then that's fine. You just go over here and run
take all your stuff with you
and take all your stuff. And it's, and they didn't take your stuff away. Right. They just said, you know, we're not going
to
run it anymore.
But you can also, if I wanted to have a vape service, I could have that SDK built into the software of my vape. And every single time I hit the vape, it could send a payment.
You could do this. Yes.
This is the stuff I think of, Dave. This is how I think at night. Wow, wouldn't it be cool if we could have vape as a service? Mm.
Well, we've already got the feed your sheep thing, so I think this makes a lot of sense. It
makes a lot of sense.
I didn't see feed your sheep on Roy's article in his idea starter section. I think he's slacking a little bit.
I have the article in the show notes. It's really cool.
We clearly need.
We need Roy. We need Roy to.
We need
come
Roy.
Talk,
Roy,
come talk to us. Roy, come talk to us.
Yeah. We
as
need
soon,
Roy
as soon as possible because this is a game changer. Now is it all because I saw you were looking at it. Does it all work? Is it functioning now?
I fired up a demo project mm-hmm. and was going to get around and play with it, and I went and I couldn't find the packages were not in the repos, like public repos for anything. And he said for now that you have to build it off the GitHub source. So that's fine. But then he's going to do what he needs to do, to give me and Alex access to the green light. It's a two-parter. It looks like, if I understand it correctly, it's a two-parter. You have the Breeze SDK code itself, mm-hmm. but then you need a green light library to put with it. But the green light code is not open source yet. It's going to be, but they haven't released it yet. So he needs to give us access to the green light code so that we can actually build the SDK. Mm-hmm. So he's going to give us access to that code. Then I'll build it. I'll make some test projects with it, and I'll be able to speak more intelligently about it once that happens. Mm-hmm. It looks cool though. Very cool.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I'm very excited. I mean, that's something we've been needing for a long time in this space. Mm-hmm. In lots of spaces. I mean, it can be in anything. I mean, that's what I like about the SDK. Put into a vending machine, put into wherever you want it. That's a cool system.
One thing I like about the Lightning ecosystem is the way that it's evolving is that, and I think maybe the Lightning, the LDK thing was the first group to kind of embrace this idea mm-hmm. is you're taking a node. And then you're splitting it into its component parts and you're saying, okay, these are all the different things that when brought together constitute what a node is, but you blow them apart and you can say, okay, I'll do this part over here, this part over here. I'm going to replace this with a different database. I'm going to use this, you know, as an LSP. It's like you can mix and match these component parts, and what you end up with is still a functional node.
Right.
But it's just kind of like, it's like deconstructed, and you're running it in different ways. And I think they're taking, I think what Breeze has done is they're taking advantage of this concept of deconstructed node, and they're putting in there, they're using that as a service provider model.
Right.
And so you still get all the benefits of running your own node. Well, technically not all, because you could be kicked off or whatever. I mean, if they don't want to host you, but you're getting most of the benefits of running your own node, the privacy, the key management.
Yeah.
The security of funds, you know, the benefit of having it always on IP.
It's like an email service provider versus hosting your own email.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
You mean 100%?
No, I mean, unconditionally.
Unconditionally. All the way. Right, yes, on.
Exhaustively.
All right, brother. I got to get you out of here. We're 2 hours on the nose. 2 hours on the nose.
All right.
Hoping you feel even better. Hoping the beef milk makes the beef milkshakes do their business.
I always feel better after the show. I get an adrenaline pump during the show.
All right. Thank you very much, chat room. Thanks everyone who was hanging out with us. Lit Dave, brother, I love you. We'll talk next week.
All right, man. See you.
Okay. That's it. Podcasting 2.0, the board meeting on the books. We'll be back in 7 days from now to tell you all that's going on. Come back for Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!